Turn that mic volume up on the headphone there, and we're fine. Hey, tonight's going to be a great show, Adam.
It sure is.
Turn that.
It's better every single time.
It does. You know, it seems that way. Everything seems to flow smoothly. Going to be an awesome show. We're not going to have too much music tonight. Tonight's going to be a little bit of comedy. I do have a couple music tracks. We're going to be listening to possibly some Jerry Clower, maybe a little Statesman or... Not sure what exactly we're going to... I got some good tracks. Good. I like spending my time, you know, hunting down some stuff.
Yes.
And I have got... I've been promoting this all day today. I have got a guy that's come... We're going to give him a call here in a few minutes. And it's going to be a great show. We will have with us today Mr. Nick Sacco. He's a former Marine Corps sniper, former law enforcement sniper, motorcycle officer. Let's see, I got my notes turned around. This will be interesting. He was once assigned to a bodyguard detail for a very famous person. So find out who that was.
Yeah, we got to find out who that was.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Oh, also want to tell people, Adam, that a lot of people don't get a chance to listen to the show Saturday nights because they might have to work or they've got other commitments or it's just family night and they want to go out with their family. And I certainly understand that, but they still want to catch the show. They can go to KUPRradio.com or KHIIradio.com and go to the Jason Kirkman Show page. They can download all the shows that we've got so far.
That's really great. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Be able to do that.
Yep. There's a lot of good stuff on our website, too. A lot of good stuff. But
of course, the weather.
I just dropped a bunch of papers on
it. Oh, come on.
Yeah. I gotta go wipe the butter off my fingers,
oh,
I guess. But there's a lot. You know, the weather page. We've got the New Mexico road condition page. A lot of good stuff on that website. I updated it a little bit today. And so it's a good website. Of course, I want to tell you, there's a restaurant here in town. And I'm not going to mention their name, but they serve this soup called Chicken Enchilada Soup.
Really?
It's awesome. I'll tell you about it later. But this week, me and my wife went to this restaurant, and I said, you got to try this soup. It's really, really good. She'd never had it before. So she tried it. She fell in love with it. We went home. She found a recipe for it.
Oh,
it's chicken enchilada soup. It is really good. If you want the recipe, go to my personal website, alamoj.com. Up at the top bar, there's a little button that says recipe. I've got it on there. So it's a... Oh, man. I'm telling you what.
Oh, man.
I'm not a big fan of soups. I grew up eating a lot of soup. My mom made all sorts of soup. Vegetable soup is the main one that I remember. And chicken noodle soup, cream of mushroom. I like cream of mushroom. Cream of mushroom soup is really good over a bed of rice and some steak. That's the best way to have that soup.
We haven't had a whole lot of soup while I was growing up, but mainly chicken noodle soup my grandma would make. She'd make it homemade. The homemade noodles.
That's good stuff. I've never been a real big fan of soup. If I go to a restaurant, I won't order soup.
No. I want a steak.
That's a waste of time and money. If I want to eat soup, I'll get it out of a can at home.
Yeah.
But there are some soups out there that are you can't get them in a can.
No.
You just can't. You have to make them yourselves or have some gourmet cook, such as in a restaurant, make them for you. But that chicken enchilada soup, I'll tell you what, I ate off that for about 2 days leftovers, and it was good. And it's gone now. My mother-in-law and... no problem with me, but she took the rest of it to work and ate that. So I had more than my fair share, but it was absolutely great. Anyway, hey, you know what? Let's play a quick track real quick. Let's see. What have I got here? Let's start off the show. Not with gospel today. Today's going to be a lot different. From a long time ago, here's Elvis Presley with I Beg of You.
Elvis, that's the man.
I don't want my heart to be broken, but it's the only one I got. Darling, please be careful, you know I care a lot. Darling, please don't break my heart out. that's what's bound to happen if you ever say goodbye. Oh, darling, please don't say goodbye. I hold my hand and promise that you'll always love me true. Make me know you love me the same way I love you, little girl. I've gotten the end of your mercy now that I'm in love with you. So please don't take advantage, 'cause you know my love be true. But darling, please, please love me true. I beg you.
All right, Adam, we're going to do something a little different tonight. We're going to make a call. We're going to make an outbound call via Skype. You're familiar with Skype, right?
Yes, I am.
I'm calling Nick Sacco. I'm going to place that call right now, see if we get him on the line. He's in Lake Havasu, Arizona.
Oh, man. That
right now.
Sounds nice.
It's a very nice place. It's quite a ways away.
Living by a lake.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Nick Sacco.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Of course, you're expecting us to put you on the air tonight, correct?
Yeah, it is correct. I am ready to go, sir.
Well, we are live on the air as we speak. Now, Nick, I want to tell my listening audience, I want to tell them exactly how we met some time back.
Okay.
Well, long story short, folks, there was an elderly lady when I used to live in Missouri that I would go and visit her, and she would make me some very, very good meals quite a bit. Probably contributed to some of the health problems I had later on. Very good meals. And one day, I was looking at some pictures on her wall, and I saw a very, very distinguished mustached gentleman posing next to a police car. And I was just impressed. I wasn't a police officer at the time. I was very impressed with that picture. And that photograph may have had something to do, Nick, with me becoming a law enforcement officer later. I don't know.
Wow.
But, yeah, I had too much information.
Wow. I'm honored, but please. Continue. Keep talking about me.
Certainly. Well, I saw this picture, and I asked this lady, I said, who is this? She said, that's my son, Nick Sacco, which turns out makes Nick my second cousin, right?
That's correct. That is right.
So if we had met, and we had talked about this earlier, if we had met, it was so long ago that we didn't remember. I was definitely probably not even walking yet, maybe.
You know, that would have been right, and it was, I think, years later that you and I actually had a chance to talk again, and you were at my mom's house, probably being fed again. Yeah,
I was, and I didn't stick around too long because I understand that when you're visiting somebody and family comes in, that's time for them.
Yeah.
So I don't recall that I stuck around too much. As much as I wanted to, I believe you were in the health. You have had a lot of careers. You were in the health profession at that time.
You could have been. Because I had gone through paramedic school some years ago and had the opportunity to work in the emergency medical field.
I remember that. But before that, now, the picture I saw, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were a police officer at that time. Was it Osage Beach or Lake Ozark?
That was Osage Beach, Missouri. And that was so long ago, Jason. That was back when they used to roll up the sidewalks and everything in the wintertime. I mean, the city used to literally close down in the winter and reopened again back in the summer.
You mentioned that phrase, roll up the sidewalk. I had never heard that before. I got to tell you about the first time I heard that, Nick.
Okay.
I was patrolling in a little town called Stover.
Uh-huh.
And there was an alley that I used to cruise down every night. And I wasn't going super fast, but I wasn't poking either. I just cruised down that. Well, unbeknownst to me, and it was darker, that, as a friend of mine says, darker than the inside of a hairy dog.
Right.
It was dark out, and I'm just cruising along. Unbeknownst to me, the city street crew had dumped a pile of wet asphalt in that alley, and for all intents and purposes, completely walled it up.
Okay.
It's dark out, black asphalt, looks like the black sky to me.
Yeah.
I put that car into that pile of asphalt at about 30 miles an hour. 20 to 30, somewhere around there. Well, I'd seen two officers before I turned around that corner there. They were talking to each other on the side of the road like officers do, and I said, I got on the radio and I called one of them. Bart Ward was his name, great friend of mine. I said, I'm down here in this alley, and I said, I really need you to come down here, because I was trapped. I mean, I couldn't even get out of the car, the doors or anything. And he said, do you need me to expedite? And, of course, you know what that means. You want me to turn on the lights and siren? I was like, no, don't expedite, but don't wait around either. He turned the lights and siren on. About three deputies come following him. They get out of their cars with Polaroid cameras. So, anyway, they dig me out. I go to the car wash, clean the car up. And, again, I never heard that phrase, roll up the streets at night. So I go down to the local the gas station, you know, where they cook all the fried food and they're open all night.
Right.
That's another reason why I had health problems later on.
Yeah.
So I'm in there, and I'm eating, and I'm composing myself, and this truck driver comes in, and I didn't know who he was. I'd never seen him before. He looks at me and says, what's the matter with you? Did they roll up the streets at you at night? And I thought he was talking about that wet asphalt. And I was like, what in the world is that supposed to mean? You know, I got a little upset.
How did you hear about this already?
Yeah, exactly. And, they told me that there was going to be a picture of it in the next day's newspaper. I was so glad there wasn't. So... cookies are done. I don't know where that noise is coming from. But, Nick, I wanted to, we'll get back to talking about you. Now, you told me, and give me a brief rundown of your law enforcement career. You didn't work for Osage Beach first, did you?
Yeah, I did. That's where I started out at. Got my feet wet there. I had a good learning experience. I went on up, though, to Kansas City, Missouri. I was offered a job in Kansas City with the sheriff's department. So I went up to Platte County. I worked for a really good sheriff by the name of Tom Thomas for a long time. And from there, then I transferred to Kansas City, Missouri, and I was working there. I started out working, as you and I say, pushing a patrol car around. And I transferred into traffic, which is really my favorite. Work in traffic was, to me, that was, you know, the best kept secret in the department. Work traffic. Eventually went into motorcycle school. I've become a motorcycle officer, and that's where I was when I got out of law enforcement.
I understand. You know, traffic. I always said traffic was a lot like Forrest Gump's phrase, like a box of chocolates, because you never know what you're going to get.
I tell you what. Part of the thing, you know, I'm not trying to plug my new book, but
no, I want you to go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Plugging my new book. One of the things that you're going to find in there are just lots of stories that I experienced when I was working traffic and what people would tell you, because everybody had an excuse for why they did what they did, why they ran a stop sign, why they passed you doing 30 miles an hour on the highway, why they did this or did that. And I tried to throw a lot of those stories in the book for entertainment value.
Well, off the top of your head, what was the best excuse or the funniest excuse you ever had?
Well, funniest excuse. I had a lady pass me on the interstate once, doing about 25 miles over the speed limit. I stopped her, and I said, you know, you just passed me. I'm in a marked car. What are you thinking? And she said, well, I'm late. And I said, okay, well, I understand you're late, but, you know, you have to do the speed limit. I'm going to let you go with the warning. And so I pulled out. I got down the road about a mile. I look up. Here comes the station wagon, same lady, blows by me again. I stopped her a second time, and I said, you know, I just stopped you down the road. And she goes, I know that. She goes, I told you then, I'm late.
Like, weren't you listening, Nick?
Yeah, silly me.
You know, I arrested the same drunk driver one time twice in a night.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he bonded out. The bondsman took him straight to his car. Took him straight to his car. And I told him, I had a feeling he was going to do this, too, because the bondsman was known for this particular bondsman. I said, don't do that. I said, because I will, that is the main road through my beat, and I will probably see it, sure enough. One thing, and we mentioned this with Rob Chapin here a couple of weeks ago, one thing that we noticed is the drunk drivers, most of the men, they wouldn't be real happy at first, but by the time they bonded out or by the time you put them in jail for the night, they were ready to shake your hand.
Yeah, you're very true. You're very right.
But the women wanted to kill you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my. Yeah, they just want to scratch your eyes out. You know,
yeah. Because... Matter of fact, I think that's what Rob said. Scratch your eyes out.
So, oh, my.
Now, Nick, I've got to ask you, because you mentioned something in your email to me that you were there the night one particular event happened. And when you mentioned this, it brought back some memories to me, because I actually remember reading the story about this in Reader's Digest. Mm-hmm. But you were there the night. Was it a big ball? It was a dance, wasn't it?
It's what they called the teacup dance. It was kind of a big yearly event. It was a real popular with just, I mean, all kinds of people down at the Hyatt in Kansas City. It was down in downtown Kansas City near the Hallmark Cards. And the night that I was on duty, that night, and I actually was on a disturbance call with another officer. We were at the husband and wife arguing, yelling out loud type of thing, and we
never heard of it.
Yeah, never experienced that, have you?
Yeah, well.
And while we were on the call, the dispatcher sent out an alert and said that there had been a reported bomb explosion at the Hyatt, and they were sending out fire. They were sending out at that time it was massed ambulance. It was the city's paramedic service. They were rolling all the fire crews, and by the time I got back in the car, it wasn't in my area, so I was just, I was like everybody else. We were trying to find out what had happened, what had gone on, and then they started contacting us traffic people, especially sending us down into the city to start conducting traffic control, because they had come to find out that the stairways had collapsed and there was multiple casualties.
Now, these weren't just stairways. These were like walkways that went from one end of the building to the other, but they were through the air. Weren't they like four stories up?
That's right. And they were suspended by a long rod, a steel rod. There was multiple points where they were all suspended, and the rod went from one walkway, then through the second walkway, and through the third walkway, and on up. And after the disaster had happened, and there'd been a big investigation with engineers and experts and whatever, what they found was the integrity of the connection points at the top stairway had pretty much just given away under the load of people who were on those walkways looking down onto the dance floor. And when one collapsed, it hit the next one, it was like a pancake effect, like you would see in a...
like a downward domino.
Yeah, exactly. Almost like in a like a trench collapse type of thing.
It was an engineering issue. How many were there people killed that night? I don't recall.
Oh yeah, there were. I'm going to apologize because I'm not exactly certain, but it was. I'm wanting to say around 150 people died in that accident.
I'm going to have to look that up and do a little research.
Yeah,
Adam, you ever heard of that incident?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, that's. I remember reading about it in Reader's Digest. Of course, I was about 13 or 14 when I read about it. Had no idea that you were there. That's interesting.
Yeah, long time ago, and it's one of those things that you just never forget. You always remember where you were. You always remember what happened. It was just a bad day in Kansas City history.
Now, up until a year or so ago, you still lived in that area. Did they rebuild that the same way, or do they still have skywalks, or is the hotel not even there anymore?
No, it's there, but I'm going to be really honest with you, Jason. I never, ever, after that time, never went back there again, never stepped foot in the door. I can't tell you what they did as for how they rebuilt it, if they put the skywalks back up or not.
That's interesting. I appreciate that story. Hey, I understand, too. Now, you, one of the things you sent me in an email was that you worked in executive protection detail. Was that while you were a police officer, or is that something done privately on the side?
Well, I did a little bit of both. I was I did some executive protection, you know, through the police department. They would have someone big come into town, and they would assign a detail of officers to protect. I had the again the opportunity to also do it for the private sector. You know, having been in law enforcement, that us cops, we're notorious for working two jobs at a time.
Well, that's because the job doesn't pay that much sometimes.
That's right. So, yeah, so I did, and at one point I actually was the bodyguard for Robert Redford.
What was he like?
He was as dull as watching paint dry, to be really honest about it.
Well, he makes some exciting movies. I'll give him that.
Wow.
He made some good movies, but on a one-on-one, he was very reserved, very quiet.
You know, I can see that.
Yeah. And so, but he was a nice guy, and he was polite.
I'll tell you what, Nick, we're going to play a little music right now, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to ask you about some family connections.
Sounds great. You know what? I'll be here.
Okay, we'll be right back. Right after, I'll tell you what, instead of some music, here's one of my favorite stories from Jerry Clower talking about a coon hunting monkey.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, sounds about right.
When I was growing up, word got out that the best coon hunter in the world was a fellow that lived at East Macomb, Mississippi. And we done sent him word by the mail rider, there ain't no coon dog in the world good as Highball. Don't you ever say or tell nobody that there is. We don't believe it, none. Well, we got us up a little contest. They said, yeah, this feller will catch more coons on a night's hunt than y'all will. Well, he come driving up in his pickup truck to East Fork School. That's where we met. Fella let the end gate down on one of them pickups, and that was a cage, and sitting up in the back of that pickup was a big brown monkey. Marcel said, whoo, look, don't let that thing out. Said he looks, said keep him in there. Said he looks too much like folks to be getting out of there. You leave him up in that pickup truck. Fellow said, y'all don't understand. I use a dog with the monkey. I just want one good tree dog, and I'll show you how to catch more raccoons. The hides are expensive. And I make a good living with that monkey, coon hunting. Marcel said, I ain't taking my dog with that trashy thing. Clovis said, I'll take old June and we'll go. So all of us followed, and old June hadn't gone very far, and she treed. Now, any coon hunter will know that sometimes a raccoon will get up in a tree and he'll tap the tree, go out on a limb and jump into another tree, go out on a limb and jump into another one, and come down way out yonder. Well, that's the art of being a good coon dog. You circle around, make for sure he ain't tapped the tree, and he's up there if you say he's there. Well, old June tree to turn that monkey loose, had him on a chain, and people, he had a flashlight in his left hand and a pistol in his right hand. And up that tree he went, boogity, 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 right up that tree, went all over the tree, shining that light and had that gun. Looking everywhere, out on each limb, shining, shining, shining. And what he did, he find the coon and shoot him, and the coon falls out. Well, he hadn't found no coon. Down the tree he come. Thumb cocked that pistol, put it up to old June's head, Clovis his dog, and said, boom, just killed him. Graveyard dead right there. Clovis said, man, what in the world do you mean? That trashy thing has killed my dog. And the fellow what owned the monkey said, Clovis, there ain't but one thing that monkey hates worse than a raccoon, and that's a lying coon dog.
Here's the Statler Brothers with You Can't Have Your Kate and Edith Too.
On a double date,
me and Edith. Alrighty, sounds good.
You and Kate, before we got past the front gate, there you were making eyes at Edith while you were making time with Kate. You can't have your Kate and Edith too. You rascal, you, a little lady too. Then we went to a driving show. You were kissing on Kate. she wouldn't let you go. I looked at Edith, started feeling bold. I found your big hairy hand holding on to the hand I was trying to hold. You can't have your cake and Edith too. You rascal, you, a little lady too. Edith asked me if I would get her some popcorn. I said I would. When I got back, Dad blamed a few and crawled into the back seat with Edith, and Kate was back there too. You can't have your cake and Edith too. You rascal, you, little lady who. Years have passed since that first day. I married Edith, you married Kate. Now every night when I come home, your fires and driveway, Kate's in the car, and you and Edith in the house alone. You can't have your cake and Edith too. You rascal, you, little lady who.
That was the Statler Brothers with You Can't Have Your Kate and Edith Too. Nick, have you ever heard that one before?
You know, I have not, but I have now.
Anybody knows me like knows I like to find those quirky tracks, quirky music, and just oddball stuff. Stuff that you can't hear anywhere else.
That's right.
That's what makes a program and a person, an individual, a character,
that's
unique.
Right.
So I got sitting across from me Mr. Adam Arnold, getting ready to go in the Navy this August?
September.
Oh, the Navy.
You got to be nice, but do you have any advice for Adam?
Any advice? Well, the old saying is do whatever you're told to do as quickly as you can do it.
That's good advice.
That is. A lot of people, they don't understand how to get through boot camp, and it's simple. Just do what they say. Don't argue. And
that's
just
right.
Keep going.
Yep.
All it is just them brainwashing you for you to do what they want you to do.
That's right.
Go ahead, Nick.
Well, I was going to say when I went in the Marine Corps in basic training, my recruiter kind of gave me some advice. He said, one day, he said, your DI is going to come up and he's going to ask you if you like him. And if you say, you know, that you don't, well, he's going to punish you for it. So he said, if your DI comes up and he says, do you like me? Tell him that you'd say, sir, the private doesn't know yet. So I thought
answer.
I had the perfect foolproof way to get out of trouble, and sure enough, a day come, drill instructor come up, and he said, Private Seiko, do you like me? And I thought about it, and I went, sir, the private doesn't know yet. And I think I did about 400 push-ups.
So it didn't work. Okay, Adam, there you go.
Okay.
Don't use that line. You know, I remember, I think it was my dad telling me about when he went to Chicago Great Lakes Boot Camp. He said they'd been there about a week, and the food wasn't really good, you know, his boot camp food. He said they went through the line, and they had cake that day.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy put a piece of cake on my dad's tray, and my dad, he said his eyes lit up. He hadn't had cake in a while. And the guy serving the food saw his eyes light up. He goes, would you like two pieces? My dad said, yeah, that'd be great. The guy leaned over the counter and cut his piece in two.
That's just terrible.
That is, but that's what – you know, I wasn't able to join the military. I tried to join the Navy back during the first Gulf War, and I had some leg problems that I never knew I had. They hadn't really affected me, but it was enough to they had civilian doctors at the time because of all of our military doctors were shipped overseas, and they were not really in favor. The couple of doctors that we had, they weren't really in favor of the war, and they were trying to get everybody rejected that they could. And this is from the recruiter himself.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally forgot where I was going with that. Where was I going with that?
Well, let's see.
But I love military movies. Absolutely love them, especially the Jack Webb, the DI. Excellent movie. You seen that before? I watched another one on Netflix this week. I didn't know if I would like it. It had Darren McGavin in it, which I like him. He's a good actor. He's the guy that played the father in The Christmas Story. You know, you'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Great guy.
And it had the guy, Jan Michael Vincent, the guy that played the helicopter pilot in Airwolf.
Sure.
And Jan Michael Vincent played a hippie that was drafted into the Marine Corps. And it was a really good movie. The movie showed the viewpoints of both of them. Here's a guy that said, he told him in the beginning, I'll never pick up a rifle, I'll never kill anybody. but I'm here to do what I can to serve my country and do what I'm told until that time comes. And it was a really good movie. But I love those kinds of movies. I absolutely love them.
Have you seen Men of Honor?
I don't think I have. What's your favorite movie, Nick?
Well, I got to tell you, Full Metal Jacket is probably my favorite war movie. And I've got to tell you, people always say, well, what was it like in basic training in the Marine Corps? And I'll tell you, that movie and that the first part of that, when they're going through Marine Recruit Depot in Paris Island, is about as authentic and on the money that any movie has ever been.
I've heard Full Metal Jacket, it's pretty rough to watch sometimes.
It can be. You know, Jason, I hope you don't mind me getting on a side note here, but I'm going to tell you something. One of the reasons I went to the Marine Corps is because of your father.
Oh, I'd love to hear this.
I was really young. Now, I was probably about 6 years old, and he went in during the Vietnam War, and he's probably going to get mad at me for saying this, but your dad was on a sister ship to the Pueblo. A lot of people, I mean, you guys may not even know what that was, but the Pueblo ship was a spy ship, a Navy spy ship that was captured off of the coast of...
Remember my dad telling me this.
Yeah, and your dad, though, when he got out of the Navy, I remember he came to St. Louis Airport, and I remember we were there to meet him, and he had been sworn to secrecy about their mission, and for years, and I'm telling you, for years... Like, we'd have a family reunion, and somebody would come up to my cousin Randy, and they'd say, Randy, what'd you do, you know, when you were in the Navy? And he'd look at them just as serious as could be, and he'd say, I can't tell you.
Yep.
And he never broke his oath, and I was...
He won't tell me to this day, because I've asked him myself.
I know, and I have always had the most respect for him because of that devotion to duty.
Well, I'll tell you this, Nick, you just sent chills up my spine because you mentioned the oath. There's a lot of people out there today that take an oath of some sort in military service. Adam's kind of he's getting goosebumps, too, I can tell. I took an oath, too. And, you know, there's this group out there called Oath Keepers. Yeah. And there's some, you know, you can be an Oath Keeper without being a member of that organization. And that's what I am. I'm not a member of that organization. I've checked out their forums and stuff. But I am an Oath Keeper, and I'm proud of it. I will tell you this. There was a sheriff one time that I interviewed, just off the record interviewing him. I said, what would you do if some forces, I won't say whether, you know, I didn't say whether they were domestic or foreign, but somebody, supervisor, somebody high up came in and said, would you go door to door and confiscate guns because we're in a state of national emergency? I thought he would respond with, no way, that'd be unconstitutional. That's not the answer I got. The answer I got was, well, it would depend on who's giving the orders and how bad things were. I'd hate to do it. That's not a question that's, and we're not going to get off in politics, but that's not a question that's up for debate.
Yeah.
Adam, yeah, exactly. We'll talk later, Adam.
We'll talk later.
We will. But anyway, there was something else I was going to ask you.
When did you join the Marines?
I joined the... in 1979.
Okay. Yeah, that was what month?
Oh, golly. Okay, February.
February. Oh, I was 8 years old, Nick. I was 8 years old.
Now, see, let me tell you a really quick story there. I didn't tell my parents because my dad, he was totally adamant about, you know, he come from World War II, and he had lost a lot of really close friends and relatives in the war. And to him, anybody went in the military, they would eventually go to war, and they would probably get killed. So he was totally against it. I didn't tell him. And the night before I was going to ship out, my sister ratted me out to him.
Uh-oh. Oh, man.
Yeah, so that didn't go over really good with them.
And you'd kind of already signed in blood, so to speak.
Oh, I was ready to leave 7 o'clock the next morning, and I went to my sister's house. I saw my parents' car sitting there, and my sister was coming down the sidewalk as I was going in, and I said, Mom and Dad are here, and she goes, yeah, they're here, and I told them you're going in tomorrow, and she kept walking.
Oh, wow. You know, my dad was just the opposite. He was like, I remember one time, I was about 17, and we drove from Michigan down to Missouri. He made a wrong turn. We wound up at the gates of Fort Leonard Wood.
Oh, yeah.
And I woke up, and I honest to goodness thought my dad was dropping me off. He will tell you this to this day. He thinks it was just hilarious because I panicked. I started grabbing my bags and putting my seatbelt on and gripping the seat. I was like, no, this is not the way to do this. To be honest with you, I was scared. Mm-hmm. I've seen the boot camp movies. I love the boot camp movies. I was afraid I wasn't even going to be able to make out a push-up, you know, and I just didn't need that. Now, years later, my dad talked me into joining the Navy. Told me about a little bit about his job without breaking his oath, and I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to work in radio and become a communications technician, and I was all geared up. And what happened, Nick, I went down to MEPS, and, you know, they have you do all these what I call goofy human tricks.
Yeah.
And they had one where you put your hands on your hips, and then you squat down on your knees.
Right.
And I did that no problem. Now, you said lean back and stand up without using keeping your hands on your hip. I could not do it.
Okay.
I just couldn't. They sent me to they called me back about 2 weeks later to send me to one of their Navy specialists. And I was in that room for about 3 hours, and he had everything from those little measuring calipers to yardsticks and everything. He got done. He said, the reason you can't do this exercise, he said, your knees are about a quarter of an inch too high than what they should be, and you don't have enough fulcrum, enough leverage.
Okay.
And so I went back, and I went to the recruiter, and he said, listen, he said, don't worry about it. Wait till this conflict's over. If you want to join, we'll get you a waiver. Mm-hmm. Well, different people, I'm not going to name names, became executive chiefs. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was in college, and I thought, well, I'll just go a different route with this. Like, I really wish, I have a lot, so much respect for our veterans that I really wish I'd followed up with it later. But such is life.
That's right.
Such is life. And I felt
it is what it is.
And to be honest with you, these police officers that work out here on the street, I really wish, because you know what it's like, really wish that there was some sort of status and health care benefits that they could get just like our federal veterans do, because they are the ones, when the soldiers are off to war, they're the ones protecting the homeland. They're the ones that respond to the Hyatt Sky Walls collapse and the ones that respond to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And those things, they stay with you for life. You know that.
That's right. And, you know, in a lot of the it wasn't as bad as when I was out pushing a patrol car around, but like today, the gangs out there, they have got more firepower and a total lack or no care of human life, that these guys are sometimes outgunned, outmatched out in the street.
Yep.
These gangs, they've gotten basically smarter, and it's scary.
I don't know if you know this, but a lot of them too are joining the military to get additional training.
That's right.
I've heard that.
I believe it was one of the major television shows about 2 or 3 years ago did a whole episode on how people that were sent in and even had gone to officer candidate school, some of them, so that they'd have that extra training when they got back.
Wow.
Amazing. It really
scary.
It really
scary
is.
Stuff.
It really is. So I've got as much respect for our law enforcement officers, especially the ones that stick to it. They keep their oath. They don't let the politics get to them.
Of course.
And you know, to be honest with you, that politics, it's hard to somebody pulls up, you know, you pull somebody over and you find out that they're know somebody or related. Shouldn't matter. But we won't. You know, it happens. It happens.
Oh, it's, yeah. I used to work with a guy, and he'd stop somebody every now and then, and they'd say, do you know, and they'd name a city councilman, or they'd say, do you know the chief? And he'd go, yeah. He goes, I do. And, you know, now you've got somebody to bail you out of jail.
Yep. I'll tell you a funny story, Nick. One time, I wasn't the officer that pulled over. One of my officers, when I was chief, pulled over this individual for speeding. Was going to write him a ticket. He was doing well, about 25, 30 miles over the limit. Went up there, and he said, listen, I'm in a hurry. I'm so sorry. He said, but I'm a congressman. And if you write me a ticket, it's my fellow congressmen are going to give me a hard time about it. So she was sympathetic, you know, and you know, take it for what it is. She said, all right, well, I'll do you a favor, but don't let me catch you again speeding through town this fast. She tore the ticket up. She came back in. She told me about it. I looked the guy up on the internet. He had not been in politics in over 30 years.
Oh, jeez.
Okay.
So, it's just, oh, he's a character. He was a character. Now,
you know, the in Jeff City, the policeman there used to, because I knew a lot of them, they used to share stories that when the Senate was in session, they could not arrest guys that were on the way to Senate, and they would have senators racing through the city limits, I mean, way out of the speed limit, and they'd stop them, and they'd just show their credentials, and they'd go, I'm on the way to the Senate, and they couldn't do a thing about it.
Well, they got to get those laws passed, you know.
That's right.
So, I certainly, I had an opportunity one time. It was a kind of silly thing. What do we got here, Adam?
You could just read. I don't know if you could probably should say that.
Okay. Let's see. I'm not even sure what this is, Adam. We just got a text message in.
Okay.
Oh, okay. You have a relative.
That's right.
On the police force in a different city. Oh,
yes.
Okay. No, there was a sergeant there in Jeff City that worked for the Capitol Police, and I won't mention his name. You might even know him. I don't know. I'll mention it to you later. Really nice guy. He taught me so much. But he came up to the Miller County Jail one time. He said, I need to turn myself in. I said, for what? He said, I'm embarrassed to admit this. He said, I have a warrant for my arrest. I said, for what? He said, failure to return rental property. He had turned in a videotape at a video store, and they lost it.
Okay.
Well, they ended up filing a charge against him for it. He paid it, you know, but just silly stuff like that. It doesn't, I'll tell you what, you got to be careful. You can be arrested if you're not careful for a lot of things. It's just, you just got to watch your P's and Q's, make sure you get your videos turned in, watch how you drive.
And you know what, that's actually happened to me once. We went to, my mom and I went to Hastings to rent a movie. And I didn't realize we got a movie out of, I thought we bought the movie, but it was being rented. We kept it for about half a year.
Did they send the police after you, or just send you some letters?
$600 fine, though.
Late fee? $600 late fee?
Yeah, $600 late fee. They said you could either pay the $600, or you could just buy the movie.
Wow, that's an expensive movie.
That is an expensive movie.
$6 or $600.
You know, for $600, I think that should include the rights to the movie. Almost.
But we just paid the $6, and now we own the movie.
Wow.
That's okay. I can tell you a story about getting stopped by the another policeman. Now, my same precinct, and he said, "Yeah, I just got a call from this convenience store that you didn't pay for your gas." And I went, "What are you talking about? You know, this was back after they changed the laws, and you had to prepay to get your
right.
gas."
Mm-hmm.
We went back there, and I'm gonna tell you what. And I'm sorry to say this, but that gal working in that convenience store was dumber than a bag of hair. And
wow.
Somehow she had looked out and had seen me drive off. And oh, you know what it was? I tell you what had happened is I got there and the pump wouldn't work. I stood there trying to get the pump to work. Finally, I went, okay, I'm going to go to another gas station. So I left. Well, she looks out, sees me driving off, gets this idea that the $30 or whatever was on the pump before that I had pumped it and drove off. Of course, you couldn't do that then.
You're right.
You know, yeah, you're right. You can get arrested for just anything, especially if you're dealing with people that...
Well, as my grandpa used to say, the people that, if brains was lard, they wouldn't grease too big a pan.
I'm going to steal that one, too.
Yeah, sure. Well, Nick, I got to tell you, we got about 15 minutes left, 10 to 15
sure.
minutes. I've got to ask you this. You told me in your email that we've got... Now, of course, you've mentioned already Italian, and we've talked about movies, and what are Italian movies famous for?
Oh, mobsters.
Come on.
Now, you've told me we've got family connections in the mob. I did not know this.
We sure do. See, my dad's family, my dad's father and all of them, they were from Sicily. Trapezzini, Sicily, which is up in the northwest coast. My grandfather, who was... Antonio Sacco. He came over at the turn of the century with his father, who was Giuseppe Sacco. And they were both, I mean, it was known throughout the family, they were both in the mob. And what they, I'm not exactly certain, they were kind of like enforcer types, the ones that would go up and say, you know, you need to pay this amount of money so your place doesn't burn down. And they were actually working their way up to Chicago from New Orleans, which was the immigration point for the Sicilians then. And they were, what they were doing is doing enforcement work. They were burning down a warehouse on a guy that wouldn't pay up. And my grandfather, who was Anthony, didn't know his father was still in the building when he flipped the switch, and his father was killed in that blast.
Wow. Now, you also told me, and I won't get too in detail with it, because I want to ask my dad and hear it straight from the horse's mouth, but you told me that one time my dad, and were you with him?
I was little.
Okay.
I was in the front yard watching all this take place.
But my dad and his dad was with your dad, and they went and paid a visit to somebody.
Yeah, there was a guy down the street who, my dad, like I said, was a good, tough old Sicilian, and you didn't tell him what to do. I mean, he told you what to do. This neighbor came down one day, and was giving my dad a lot. My dad worked for the city of St. Louis,
right?
And he had a lot of men that worked for him who were black and good, hardworking guys. And he had some came by the house one day to visit him for some reason. The neighbor come down, told my dad who he could and couldn't invite to his house. And my dad blew a cork, and I was sitting on the front porch when your dad and my dad marched down the street and confronted this guy in his front yard. And it was just kind of one of those images you never ever forget. My dad standing there, he was young and tall and thin, and then my dad, who was just stocky and ready for a fight, chewing this guy out in the front yard of his house.
Huh. Well, I'll tell you what, Nick. Right now, I'm going to play one more song.
Okay.
And this is, I'll tell you what, we're going to play a gospel song. This is one of the smoothest, sweetest songs I've ever heard, sung by one of my favorite singers, Gary McSpadden. He's a pastor in Branson, Missouri right now. He was one of the founding members of the Imperials, who later went on to back up Elvis Presley. Mm-hmm. But this song, if you ever get discouraged and tired of this old earthly life, think about heaven. Boy, I'll tell you what, this song will make you want to go there. Here's Glory Land by Gary McSpadden, Jake Hess, and the Imperials.
There's a land that's filled with milk and honey and sunshine's bright on the in your heart to
quick, Nick, tell us about Cuba.
Well, Cuba's changed a lot. When I was there, it had a population of about 1,000, but since then, it's hopping a little more, but not a lot more. Right. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're good, pretty well known family there in town when I was growing up. Wow, didn't know that. You ask your dad about his sheepdogs. He had sheepdogs so smart, cattle dogs. He taught them that at night, he'd tell them to go get the cattle. They'd disappear down in the lower 40, and about 30 minutes later, here they'd come bringing back the cattle, and then he'd tell them to get the chickens in the coop, and those dogs are smart enough to round all the chickens up in the coop, so he'd go close the door.
Wow. Well, I just noticed, Adam and I have had some, our mics were down here for just a minute, but we got them back up now. It is 6:55 right now, and that's what time I usually shut down the show, Nick.
But it's been
absolutely great having you on here.
I've enjoyed it.
Well, I'm going to have you on again.
Most definitely.
You're a very well energized. You're a great orator. You do well. So I want to ask you real quick. Tell me briefly in 2 minutes or less about this new book you've got coming out and how we can get it.
Well, we've got a book. Hopefully, target date's going to be right before Christmas of this year. So it's not just like right around the corner. It's called How to Get Out of Jail Free. And it's pretty much, it's a look at law enforcement for the novice. People, they see us running radar, but they won't really know what we're doing or how the court systems work. It begins with like the most basic of how do police do their job, and it goes all the way to the very end where you've really messed up and now you're in prison. What do you know, what should you expect? It is kind of a for anybody that just doesn't know what happens in law enforcement and in the judicial system and in the penal system, but this is going to open your eyes and it's going to kind of answer all those questions for you.
And that's not just one state, that's across the board, across the country.
That's
right.
That's exactly so. It's going to kind of try to touch, example, it's going to talk about all the different crimes, assault, burglary, and arson, and everything. And it's going to talk about them, kind of in a general sense, but here's what constitutes that crime, and here's what's going to happen to you if you do it.
Fantastic.
And here's what the cops do to investigate it.
Now, I know your last book, I believe it was available on Amazon.com. Will this one be available there as well?
It sure will. It will also.
And is your last book still on Amazon.com?
It still is, too. And
the name of it?
My last book was a pet book. It's called In Heaven, Kittens Play, and it talks about where our pets go when they die.
And you are a cat man.
I'm a cat man. My lovely bride's a dog person. We joke about that. I'm the cat guy and she's the dog girl.
Well,
so
I'll tell you what, I've done a little research on cats, so the next time you're on the air, we're going to talk about cat facts.
That sounds really, really good. And I'll tell you, before I get out of here, I want you really quickly to again just tell your dad how the respect I've got for him and how much he impacted my life and my decisions. And Adam, I want to thank you for going in the Navy, and I wish you good luck if I don't talk to you again, and appreciate your service to this wonderful country of ours.
Thank you very much. That's very much appreciated.
Yes. I will tell you real quick, Nick, my dad is coming down in a few weeks. There's a chance. I'm not sure if we're going to pre-record the show for that night, but I may bring him in and have him on the air. Might bring you in too at the same time. That might make for an interesting evening.
You know what? That'd be wonderful. I would enjoy that so much.
Maybe we can get to the bottom of this USS Oxford situation.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you for having me tonight.
Oh, it's been great. And you take care.
Thanks, guys. Good night. God bless.
Well, Adam, there's Hawaii 5-0, my brother. It seems to be like a running show of law enforcement on this show. That's fine. We're going to get it. But you know what? The show is still young.
Yes.
I am going out on a hunt. And I'll just tell this right now. If there's any listeners out there that they would be interested in coming on the show and being part of our coming into the studio and telling us a little bit about yourself, your past. Everybody's got a story, Adam. Everybody's got a story.
Everybody's unique in their own way.
I have talked to homeless people. I've talked to people in law enforcement. I've talked to people in the medical field. I've talked to people who work from home filling out papers and internet jobs. Everybody has a story. And it's my job to find out what those stories are. Some people have more than one story.
That's right.
Like Nick, yeah. Mr. Chapin. So I heard about a guy here in town. Bob told me about him. I'm trying to hunt him down. Got a really good story, too. But if anybody out there would like to be on the show, call me at 573-421-5386 or send me an email. You can email the Jason Kirkman Show at gmail.com or singingcop at gmail.com. This has been the Jason Kirkman Show live with Adam Arnold. Our guest tonight was Nick Sacco. Adam, what are you going to do tonight after the show?
I'm going to go home and go to sleep. It's been a long day.
I'm going to go home and eat something because somebody in this building is cooking Italian food.
You know what? It smells really good.
It smells awesome. And if I don't get out of this building, I'm going to be an uninvited guest somewhere.
There you go.
We will now return to our regular scheduled program. This is the Jason Kirkman Show.
Good evening.
Have a great evening, Adam.